David Manuel just put away all the equipment from his sugar bush in Panema, where he spent quite a bit of time this April turning maple sap into maple sugar. And he's in the studio this morning to tell us about the season and remind us what the sugaring season means to Anishinaabe people. Welcome, David. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for inviting me, Maggie.
Yeah, we've been hearing this was not the best year ever for the sap run. What was it like for you in Panema this year?
Well, I will say that there are no, from my perspective, there are no bad sugar bush seasons. We always get something, or I should say we are given the gift of the sap to make into sugar candy and syrup. I guess to talk a little bit more in relevant and contemporary terms, it wasn't the best year, but it wasn't the worst, at least for me. I guess I'll just quickly go over my notes here. And we began tapping on March 16th. I remember the day. It was a Friday. Myself and my friend Zach and his son went out there, and we just kind of messed around and looked at the trees. I think we tapped about four or five trees just to see, of different sizes, just to see what was going on. And we got sap. So we came back on Saturday and Sunday and put in a total of 100 taps. Some were flowing, some weren't. I first want to state that not all sugar bushes are the same. Their production rates vary depending on the size of their trees in their sugar bush, the soil conditions. There are many variables. The weather, I think, is one of the bigger things that we watch and pay attention to. There's a man over in St. Louis County, Joel Rosen, who contributes to the Season Watch page quite regularly and is very, very knowledgeable and keeps very detailed records. And I'm not like that at all. But I'm going to start doing that because I think it's a good way to track seasonal changes over periods of time.
Can you tell us about the place where you tap these trees?
Yes.
Saying it varies. So what is your place like?
I tap in what would be my ancestral sugar bush. My mother, who was born in 1934, would always make it a point every time we visited relatives in Panema to show me where they went every spring for sugar bush. And that is located in a place we call Mequam Bay. It's just south of the town of Panema, about 4 or 5 miles, and off into the woods just a short distance from the lake, probably a quarter mile in from the lake, and then, you know, extends, you know, quite a ways from there. The maples seem to go on endlessly. Yeah. I've tried to walk through the entire maple grove, and I've never succeeded in doing that. So there must be thousands of maples back there.
And Panema itself is located kind of in between Upper and Lower Red Lake, right? It's kind of on
It's up on a peninsula between the Lower and Upper Red Lake. The old-time name for Panema is Ajuding, and I just learned that from one of my elders here the other day. And some people, you know, a more contemporary Ojibwe version is Obashing, which means the place where the winds meet. And Ajuding just means across the lake or cross lake. We, again, tapped 100 trees from March 16th, and then through the weekend, that would be the 17th and 18th. On Monday, the 19th of March, the school started to come out to visit. And what I did is I have a total of 200 taps and collection bags, and I set aside 20 for each day of the week. And as the classes came out, you know, we tapped 20 more trees a day. And I will say that that affected production, because had I been in my old school mode, I would have got all those taps in the weekend before. Because now I work for the Red Lake Local Food Initiative and Four Directions Development, which oversees our program, it's become an educational a cultural slash educational endeavor of mine and of the staff that support me in this undertaking. So the schools came out, and it's what I'm trying to do is pass on this cultural tradition, something that is embedded in our cultural psyche. It's embedded in mine. It's been driven into me ever since I was a boy. And as a young man, I visited different sugar bushes. I guess I want to mention my mentors, Walter Porky White from Sugar Point on the Leech Lake Reservation, and the late Jim Northrup of Sawyer, Minnesota. And those two were the ones that showed me the ways of our people. And then when I moved back to Red Lake, I began to do the sugar bush where my mother and her grandparents and the generations before her were doing the sugar bush. So I feel real good about that. And
sounds like a real strong link to your past and your culture through the sugar bush, through the whole way of making syrup and sugar.
Yes. When I first started doing this, I started out with caps carved out of sumac. You just carve them down and drill a little hole through them, notch them so you could hang a can with wire. I would go around to the school food services and collect their cans. And that's how I began. And then eventually I was able to invest in my hobby or whatever, my love, my labor of love. And eventually buy, the 5/16 taps and the collection bags and hangers, and eventually some stainless steel boiling pans. Al Bellevue, our welding instructor at New Beginnings, actually made me a setup for the boiling pans. We just made it out of an old fuel oil barrel, and it works perfectly. No need to spend big money on a commercially made evaporator. Mine works just as well or better. That's how I have progressed into what would be this season. I'll go ahead and mention that on March 24th, we began our first boil. The trees were, I want to divide this into three segments for the sugar bush. The first was the first warm-up, which again began on March 16th. And we began our first boil after collecting sap on March 24th. I should say me and my friends, Zach and Franny Miller and others, including the school kids, we made sugar. And maple taffy also, it's a stage of a candy that you can, when it gets to a certain stage, you can pour it on the snow. And then it becomes a taffy, and that's everyone's favorite.
Oh my goodness, never had this.
It's most incredible, and it only happens at that certain stage where it's before, I want to say right around the softball stage of candy, just probably even a little bit before that, because because it is sugar, it goes through its syrupy and then softball and hardball stages of candy making.
So when you're boiling, it seems you're making things like sugar and you're making things like this taffy that are beyond the syrup stage, at least some of the time. Is that hard? Because people stop often with the syrup.
Sure.
Is it like prone to burning, or is it kind of a trick to make the sugar?
The key is patience, because you have to keep it on a low fire once you decide that I'm going to make some taffy and candy and sugar. The sugar has a propensity to scorch on a high heat. So I take it out of the evaporator and I put it into my kettle, which is hung on a tripod over a low fire. And it's all about a low fire and constant stirring, just to keep, you don't want to just put it on the fire and walk away. You have to attend it. You have to be there. You have to work it. And that's how I was taught, and that's what I do. And it's not for the impatient or the ones that are seeking instant gratification. It is not for you. And don't get me wrong, I'm just as human as everyone else, but I've learned to delay that gratification, okay? Yeah. Especially when it comes to the sugar bush. You know, our ancestors, we didn't have the ability to can, so we always made sugar. My ancestors made sugar. And it was actually one of our number one commodity items that we trade and bartered for. In fact, there's a detailed history compiled by a man in Wisconsin by the name of Paul Demain, who has documented our trade first with the French and then the English before the slave trade, okay? Before the slave trade and before they made slaves grow sugarcane, sugar was a very rare commodity. I mean, it was practically non-existent except for here in North America and produced by the tribes that lived all the way from Maine and southern Canada there, the Penobscots and whatnot, all the way to the prairie here where Red Lake meets the prairie. And that is the extent in Vermont and southern Canada and Wisconsin, Michigan, New York. That is where, through trade of our maple sugar, we Indian people, indigenous people here up north here, acquired our kettles and our hatchets and muskets and other trade items from the French. And then later the English. And I don't think we really dealt with the Americans too much because, you know, the onset of sugarcane production in the Caribbean through the slave trade. Shell Munchin.
We are talking with David Manuel. He's the Local Foods Initiative Coordinator with the Red Lake Nation's Four Directions Development Program. And we're talking about the sugar bush this year.
What was the reaction? You know, you said you do a lot with the school kids when they come out. How do they react to all this?
What I've learned through the years is to be ready for them. I am a big believer in sensory learning. And so I really try to have something there for them to taste as well as experience. You know, of course, when we're tapping the trees, you know, there's nothing really going on, but they get to do something and they all want to tap a tree. And I just find that very enjoyable and gratifying. And I feel great, you know, when you know, those enthusiastic children want to learn.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know if they just want to run my portable drill or whatever, but it feels good to me. And they're learning something, you know, even if they just want to do the drill. And then others, they want to hammer in the tap. And then someone wants to hang the collection bag. And so, you know, it takes a while. But, they're learning something new. What I like to call what I'm doing with the kids is I'm reintroducing humans to the forest. That's what I'm doing, because it doesn't matter whether you live in the woods or not. The children of today aren't getting out there, and that includes the children of Red Lake. Not all of them. I'm not saying all of them. I'm not trying to blanket everybody, but we know for a fact that, you know, our children are a little bit stuck on our devices that we like to buy them because everyone else has one.
One time you told me that the sap season is the new year.
Yes, it is.
For Anishinaabe people.
What does that mean?
Well, for me, I mean, we have a calendar, kind of a contemporary calendar now based on the moons. But it varies from region to region. And there is no universal calendar. It goes from community to community based on what the land and the rivers and the streams and lakes give them. And I can't even speak for Lower Red Lake. I can only speak for the Panema area and the stories my mother shared with me and other relatives about what they did on a seasonal basis. The sugar bush is when, and this is one interpretation, the sugar bush is a time where the snow started to warm up. You know, and it got above freezing in the day and dropped below freezing, and new life started to return from their on their migration routes, and so we kind of look at the new year as when new life returns, and a perfect example of that is when the trees come out of their dormancy and the sap starts flowing. Other people might say it's when the first thunder arrives. And I don't disagree with that at all. But for me, it's when the trees start running.
That's a big sign
of that new life coming back to the forest and coming back to the region.
Do you take all the tap? I've never sugar tapped, or I've never maple tapped. You've
never done the sugar bush.
Yeah, yes. That's not to say I don't want to, but right. Do you take the taps all out then after it's all done?
Oh, yeah. Let's see, on my notes here, I pulled the taps on April 24th, I believe. Again, we started March 16th. I'll also mention that the sap stopped running on March 28th, where I was at in Panema. The temperature dropped below 32, and it lasted for 16 or 17 days.
Whoa, and it didn't come back.
No, it didn't. When it drops below freezing for, just period, it stops and will not start pumping sap up and down the tree until that pattern of above 32 in the day and below 32 at night. Mm-hmm. We were literally, we didn't do anything. We finished boiling up what sap we had collected, and that first, like I said, I divided the season into thirds. When the first third is when the sap ran real well, and I was able to make 32 pounds of sugar in that time period, maybe a little bit more. And it's my understanding that there's 8 pounds of sugar in every gallon of syrup. So theoretically, I made 4 gallons of syrup had I made syrup. The sugar content at the beginning of the sap run has the highest sugar content. It's a commonly held belief that that's the time to make sugar. Actually, you can make sugar all the way through, but that's the best time because it requires less energy, less firewood to boil it down. So that's what we did for those first 2 weeks. Well, even when it went below 32, I was still boiling. We made sugar. After those 2 weeks of cold were over, the sap started running again. And I want to say, according to my notes, in and around April 12th, we started collecting sap again, maybe a little bit before then. It was iffy. It wasn't running like the first run, but we were still able to collect sap and make syrup. I made about 9.5 gallons of syrup on that final third of what I call the sugar bush season, and still had students coming out from the middle school, and I did presentations at the elementary school too, but they were unable to come out. Mm-hmm. My favorite visitors come from the Wasabeek Ojibwe Motadiwin Immersion School. That's located at the Red Lake Nation College in Red Lake. They're basically preschoolers, 3 and 4 years old, who are immersed in the Ojibwe language. And they're just so cute. They are like the most enthusiastic of all of them. They all want to run the drill and tap the trees. And when we first tap them, they're all struggling to get up there to taste the sap as it comes out. And it's just an incredible experience.
Do you sell the sugar?
No, I don't. When I used to, when I was self-employed, this was one of the activities that I used for to supplement my income. Mm-hmm. I used to, and I would get high buck stuff, to be honest.
Well, quality, and no doubt.
Thank you. like that candy that I gave you and mm-hmm. Maggie, I would charge $2 for that.
Okay.
And if we want to think in terms of economics, I would sell a quart of my syrup for $25 to $28, depending on where I was selling it and whom I was selling it to. Like if one time I set up at the Sanford powwow, I forget what they call that powwow, but it's in the spring, and I would charge $28 a gallon there. And then I think the BSU powwow used to be in the spring, and I would drop it down to $25. But in terms of economics, thinking along those lines, and I do think along those lines, I'm a 21st century person. I live in these times, and I have to survive. I would take a $25 quart of syrup, and I can make 110 candies out of that quart. And if I can get even a dollar a piece, I've increased my bottom line by four times. Mm-hmm. The money is in the value-added candy, the product of candy.
You have a workshop coming up tomorrow night.
I do.
Tell us about that.
I'll be making candy. It's something I love to do, and we'll be making candy at Dahway Wake-A-Mig, and that is our offices located at the old Red Lake College in Red Lake, Minnesota, and it will be Thursday at 5 p.m. Everyone is welcome. Everyone. We have a Facebook page called Get to Ghana K. That's G-I-T-I. And, well, anyway, it's, you know, look on Facebook and you'll find it. And I put up a post a lot of our stuff that we're doing on that page. And again, I'll be showing people how to make that maple sugar candy, because it is a process. And I just have one, mold with 20 little holes of maple leaves, and I've gotten it down to where I can make 60 candies an hour. And so that means, you know, I have to heat it up and pour it in the mold, let it cool off, pop it out, put it in its little candy wrapper. You know, I'm just a little candy making machine, and it's a lot of fun, though. It's a labor of love, like I said. You know, it's about that low heat and keep an eye, not walking away. If you got to walk away, take that stuff off the burner and do what you got to do. But, you know, don't leave it on the burner and walk away.
Yeah, there's a lot of life lessons in making candy.
Yeah, it is, and this applies to any candy that mm-hmm. you make. You can't walk away from it just because you got a thermometer in there or something. You know. You know, technology fails everyone, so it's best to use your senses.
Yeah. Well, David, thank you for coming in today. I want to check back with you. We want to check back with you later on about what's going to happen with the local foods
initiative.
Projects in okay. Red Lake later this spring, because I'm sure you have plans and probably get your garden and your high tunnels ready and
yep.
all kinds of things going on there.
Oh, yes.
Thank you so much for coming in and telling us about the sugar bush.
Thank you for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
David Manuel is Red Lake Nation Foods Initiative Coordinator. And for more information about the maple sugar candy making workshop, check out the Get to Ghana K Red Lake Foods Initiative page on Facebook, or you can call us at 800-662-5799.
We can make sure to put a link to that in our web story about this. Make it easy for people. Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.